That's improv, bitch. Improv, bitch.
I mean, after all, you're nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
Improv.
Nerds.
I'm Jimmy Crane, and this is Improv Nerd. And our guest today is Michael Patrick Thornton. You probably know him as that jerky Dr. Fife on ABC's Private Practice. He's also the co-founder of the Gift Theater here in Chicago. He teaches around town as well, and we talked to him about how he started improvising after his stroke that left him paralyzed and in a wheelchair.
Thanks for coming.
Oh, my pleasure.
Does this scare you? You seem...
This is fucking terrifying.
Really? What scares you about it?
This is just, the Heisenberg principle of, like, the thing being observed changes because it's being observed. So, like, not only do... Obviously, we know we're being observed doing an improv show.
Right.
But we're really being observed, like, the podcast and then the camera. It's also from a guy who works on a stage that's 10 feet deep. This feels very small, and I'm really excited. It's
okay,
great.
Now the ramp actually gives us an extra foot.
That's gonna break.
Okay.
But no, I'm really excited. But it's an interesting format. I've been nervous all day.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because it's funny because we've had people on, and I'm surprised that, like, actors, improvisers kind of get nervous, and when it's time to be revealing, it's something totally different.
What do you mean by totally, totally different?
Well, it's like you can go on stage, right, and you can play a murderer, right, or a pedophile, or a rapist. The parts that I, they're not going to cast me in. Well, they are going to cast me, but I'm not that good of an actor. But then when it comes to, like, just being you, it gets scary.
Yeah, I mean, this is I was telling Errol in the lobby that this is one of my worst nightmares. Like, before a show, if I'm in a whole backstage with my headphones on, that's like my heaven.
Uh-huh.
But being in the lobby, like, seeing the people who are going to come see the show was exquisitely torturous.
Okay, well, I'm glad it was.
Yeah.
Because I usually get my back. That's all been premeditated.
Yes.
Yes, it's all we torture you, you feel, and then you ask me for headphones, I say, well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Now, you grew up Irish Catholic.
I did.
And you grew up in the Jefferson Park area.
Yeah.
And you studied at the Steppenwolf Theater School.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2001, you opened this theater called the Gift Theater.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And, I mean, there's a million, you're very intense on stage. I'm just looking at your eyes, and it's very intense. Yes. Yeah. Okay. So you open Gift Theater, another storefront theater in Chicago. What is your mission for Gift?
Well, the mission is we tell great stories on stage with honesty and simplicity. That's that's not just like platitudinous grand speak. I mean, it's true. Because it's a great filter, because it implies a what and a how.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of plays are we picking? Ones that have good stories. And how are we going to perform them? Simply, honestly, and whatnot. And, but what I think the Gift really does is I think we do love stories, and it just so happens to be in the shape of a play. Like, it could have been an antique furniture store.
Okay.
You know what I mean? But it's a bunch of passionate, romantic, intelligent dorks, and it spans from people with their PhDs to high school dropouts. It's 23 of the most brilliant, prodigiously talented artists that I've ever worked with. And there literally is no other theater in the city of Chicago like the Gift, because we are a 40-seat storefront that's also equity. An average budget of a Gift show is about $32,000. 40 seats, top ticket price is $30. You can't make money on the plays anymore. And the idea for the Gift was always to put the theater in a neighborhood like the ones we grew up in, which was, when I grew up in Jefferson Park, family of cops and firemen, I was writing novels and poetry in my basement. I felt like an alien. It was a very alienating experience.
Yeah, I don't see, I want to be a poet in Jefferson Park.
Yeah. But what's brilliant about it is, we've never given up on the audience. And, and the thing is, you get a good review in the paper, and people from, Glencore, Winnetka are going to drive into Jefferson Park, and God bless them for doing that. But our mission has always been, let's work from outside the front door in, like, a concentric circle out. And we just opened up Cloud Nine, you know, Carol Churchill's sexual farce. And a friend of my father's, lifelong detective, I mean, grizzled kind of
Chicago Gap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, I don't go to theater.
Yeah. I mean, the apocryphal story about him is he knocked on a door in the 70s and said, "Are you the widow McSweeney?" And she goes, "No, I'm not a widow. My husband." And she goes, "You are. We just found him." And, you know, he came to see Cloud Nine. He loved it, you know. And it doesn't matter really what the play is out there. It's the fact that it's there, it's professional, and it's not coming off this sense of we're here to give you art. Because a couple theaters have tried to do that out there, and they were immediately shunned by the neighborhood. And a few of us are actually from Jeff Park, and I think that helped soften it a bit.
Then in 2003, St. Patrick's Day.
Great year.
Great year for you. And we kind of talked backstage about, like, about this. So you're in your 20s, and you have two strokes, 12 days apart. It leaves you paralyzed and in a wheelchair. And then you say, I read that your life as an improviser really started after you got sick. So this happens to you. And then how did you decide, like, it wasn't part of your rehab, was it?
No. I mean, I had done a show called Flanagan's Wake with the Noble Fool Ensemble. Uh-huh. I had done my first independent film in Chicago before I got sick. Was with, like, Mark Sutton, you know. And so I'd been
From The Annoyance.
So I'd been thrown in the deep end right after dropping out of college, not really knowing any better. Mm-hmm. But then I got sick, and I got back on stage. I did a one-man show called The Good Thief, which won the Jeff Ward. And then after that, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't, like, complacent. So I thought, what has scared me? And improv was something I had never been properly trained in. So I took an improv for actors class at Second City. Jack Bronis taught it, which was weirdly circuitous because I had known him from
Noble Fool.
And Jack is one of the best teachers in the city of Chicago. And it was about 2 weeks into that class where I thought, oh, fuck, I'm actually falling in love with this. Auditioned for the conservatory, got in, did that, studied at I.O., studied at Annoyance, and then Susan was a teacher of mine at I.O., and we began playing together. And yeah, I got to admit, I felt, you know, simultaneously humbled and confused, you know, when you asked me to do this. Because, I mean, the list of people you have coming here to talk are, you know, people who are these massive names in improv. And, you know, what had started out as, in retrospect, an extremely psychologically healing artistic pathway, you know, because I had spent so much time in physical rehab, and then when I would get to go to improv class at Second City, I could be anything. I didn't have to be in a wheelchair, you know. And I think it really helped heal a lot of those wounds from St. Patrick's Day.
How did people deal with you? Because, I mean, in terms of wheelchairs, disability, you don't see, I mean, I've taught for a long time.
And yeah, first thing you think when I see wheelchairs, this guy's real funny, I'm sure.
Right. You know what I think of? Freeze tag.
Yeah, or just like a Nazi dumping you off a rooftop, you know?
Yes, that's my second thought.
People were cool, you know? I mean, they had to be because every space was uniquely inaccessible, you know? So I had to be lifted up and down. And then Donnie's skybox. I had to be popped up on stage at I.O. I had to be bumped up the stairs in Annoyance. So that automatically kind of broke down those barriers. You know? And it's funny, I'm trying to think, I don't think we've ever had a scene that really got into it, like, you know, in an emotional way. It just always seemed to live quite beautifully in the world, and that was it.
As an actor, okay, you think, like, why is the city, like, it's actors and improvisers? Why are we so divided? You're an actor, right?
Yeah.
Who does improv.
Yeah, but it's all the same fucking thing, you know? I mean, I wish the difference didn't exist, because it doesn't need to, you know? I mean, you have actors going, I can't be an improviser, I'm not funny, you know? And, of course, the first thing we always teach is you don't have to be funny. Just be real, you know? And whether it's a Meisner class or an improv class or a viewpoints class, it's all the same stuff. You know, listening and responding in the moment, giving a gift of yourself, using your own emotional experience as a human being. So I wish somehow those divides came down. you know. But yeah, they're up, unfortunately.
As an actor, how's it improvisation made you a better actor?
Oh God! I mean, the television show.
This is Private Practice.
Private Practice, right? Yeah. I mean, I had gone. I had never done a television show, and then it was thrust into this. You know, my first scene was a 3-minute walk and talk with Audra McDonald down the halls of the hospital. And, you know, what you realize very fast on a TV show is because, you know, there's no rehearsal.
Right.
So if you look at, like, a science experiment, mm-hmm. the only constant is what's happening between you and me right now. The script isn't a constant. It gets rewritten up to the last moment. Depending on who you're acting with, it may get, you know, rewritten on the spot.
Right.
The location may change. Your scene partners may change. When you shoot it is going to change. So you have absolutely nothing to rely on except yourself, your instinct, and what's going on. You know, and if you're someone like me, it gives you a tremendous amount of anxiety to think that this scene, after we're done today, we will never work on this scene again.
Good.
You know.
Yeah. I'm lazy. Good. Yeah.
Well, you know, I came from a background, I mean, the Gift second or third show, Hurley Burley, in Lawrence, Milwaukee. We rehearsed for a year, 2 months. I mean, 5 days a
that
week.
That is too long. That is way too long, honestly. Yeah.
I don't think so. You know,
really?
I really don't. You know, I think because they have this wonderful expression they say sometimes when they call cut, and they go, and that finishes the scene. And in my mind, I always go, really? Does that finish the scene?
I want to work on it some more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know,
we're not
so
done.
I mean, so for it to be documented forever on DVD or on the internet, you know, the only thing that, in my mind, is going to be worthwhile is if I can simply tell the truth about what's going on. You know, there was a moment, there was this big moment, this kiss moment between Audra and I, you know, and it leaked out, and there was, like, I was getting, you know, some fan mail about it, like, oh, my God. And I felt this pressure as, like, this actor who has a disability that I had to be, like, sexy and suave in the scene. And I got there, and, the truth of the moment was I'm a little fucking terrified, you know, and there's all these people watching, and that became the scene, you know, mm-hmm. and it's one of the few things that I can watch myself, and I'm actually proud of. I'm like, well, that was the truth of that
moment. So you were saying I was scared,
yeah,
and I'm just going to use it and make it part of the character.
Of course. I mean, fear, I get worried if I'm not scared, you know, it's kind of hard to tell how much of that is, you know, put on or whatnot, you know, but I... Whether it doesn't matter, an improv show tonight or Messing or at the Gift or Steppenwolf, it doesn't matter. TV show, it's the same amount of, for lack of a better word, paralyzing terror that then yields to exquisite ecstasy and joy.
Because I'm always afraid. Like tonight,
yes.
I'm afraid. Doesn't matter what it is, I'm always afraid.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what part it is. I'm, you know, and I always think to myself, well, I can't play fear. I just did, you know. I've done it my whole life, but I guess you're saying it's okay.
I think so. I mean, I think, and also, I mean, it's also a little silly because, you know, what is there really to be afraid of? You know, I mean, it's really the death of, like, the ego or some ridiculous thing that we're...
Do you think that's changed since you got sick?
Well, I don't know. You know, when I was dying the first time...
And you were literally going to die. I mean, you weren't going to, right?
No, no, I was on a table. I was dying.
Right.
And
it's not like it was a bad show, dying.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
You know, and I looked up and I was intubated, so I couldn't talk. But I had this weird moment. The Buddhists call it like Satori, like a window opening, and you're like, oh, that's how it works. And then it closes. But I mouthed 3 words, and it's like a crazy, you know, unbearable, you know, white light story. So forgive me if you find these stories nauseating, but, you know, it happened. And it was this moment where I looked up and I was totally fine with being ready to die. And I mouthed 3 words, and the 3 words were, there's only love. I was a 285-pound, big, jocular, frat-looking idiot who, like, privately read Zen Buddhist books and, like, Chekhov biographies and didn't want to admit that to some of my friends.
Not in Jefferson Park,
you know. You should check out the Raisfield biography. It's much better. You know, so... like a pithy kind of spiritual nugget like that wouldn't have dropped out of my mouth readily. And it's been the most perplexing, one of the most perplexing moments of my life. And I feel like everything since then has been chasing those 3 words. And it's a calming mantra that I say to myself before something like tonight, where it helps to kind of dilute all the bullshit of like, what if I don't do good, what if I let you down, or what, you know what I mean, into what a fucking gift, like, A, that we're here alive in this room, you know, like I drove past five homeless people tonight, you know, mm-hmm. I was like, explain to them how you're nervous about doing a fucking improv show, you know what I mean? They would love to have that problem, right. You know? And
I'd love to have him in my class.
Yeah, like, yeah. I gave you a book.
Thanks,
you know?
I appreciate it.
Yeah, so I, you know, it's a joy to be able to play. You know, it really is.
Your spirituality, was that something that was always as a kid?
Well, I was raised Catholic, and then my grandfather was the janitor of the church we went to, and he suffered a pretty agonizing 9 months of pancreatic cancer, which drove me away from the church.
I was Catholic church?
The Catholic church, yeah. I was a philosophy minor at the University of Iowa. Had some great teachers there. And one of their quotes was, you know, a little philosophy drives you away from religion, a lot can bring you back. So I kind of do a hodgepodge of everything. Mm-hmm. You know, we go to Old St. Pat's, it's the most liberal Catholic church in the United States. They have a GLBTU union, a Jewish Catholic alliance. I mean, they're absolutely fantastic. But yeah, the spirituality does factor into making art. I don't know if it's the Catholic, like Nietzschean, like, I'm not enough.
Right.
Beginning of it, you know? But I've never had a good time on stage when I started with pure confidence.
Okay.
Oh, I got this.
All right, so.
I got it.
This is great. We're going to go right into, we're going to improvise now.
Great.
Okay? We'll do some scenes or whatever. I've never worked with you before.
I've never worked with you before.
Okay. It sounds like a disclaimer, doesn't
it? Yeah. If I start doing my FDR stuff, just let me go. I got some stuff worked out.
Now, why do you think people aren't... you're making fun of your disability. Do you think people are nervous about that?
I don't know. I don't know these people.
Okay.
Maybe they are, you know. I don't know. It's really not my problem.
Right.
You know.
I wish I could get to that point in my life.
Yeah. You know. It's my problem if I don't have fun, but I can't get
it. All right, so how are we going to bring fun to this?
I don't know.
Okay.
I'm just going to listen to each other.
Okay.
We're going to listen to each other and love each other and get through it.
Okay. And just because I'm scared and I'm stalling, just so people know that. How do I bring love into it? I mean, it's very easy to say, what were the three words I only
There's
got?
There's only love.
There's only love.
Yeah.
How do you bring love when you're performing? Because that's what I'd like to bring tonight.
Well, I mean, it's funny. Like, you know, when you're teaching, like, how many scenes have you seen start with, like, fuck you, you're an asshole, give me my rent? And then how many scenes do you see start with, like, you look really great today? You know what I mean? Like, I think we go to conflict automatically.
Right.
Now our scene will be like, fuck you, where's the rent?
Right.
You know?
But great, and then we'll come back and then they can diss us.
Exactly.
For it.
Yeah.
Okay. Can we get a suggestion?
Pork chops.
Great. And then bring lights down and bring them up.
Sorry. Okay. You don't have to stand like that. I said I'm sorry.
Okay. All right.
I'm just going to keep flipping these until they're done. I'm sorry, you're freaking me out a little bit.
I'm worried about you.
Well, I'd be worried about me too, dude.
You know, it's your birthday and you've just been depressed all day.
I know, it's kind of my de facto, so that's making me uncomfortable.
I'll walk over here. You didn't open any of your presents this morning? No. Your mom made you your favorite cake?
Mm-hmm. Chocolate banana cake?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh shit, they're burning. I think I would be a lot more comfortable maybe if your hands weren't on your hips.
All right.
You look really mad. Like, I'm sorry. Like, it's a beautiful day and you look so mad.
I am not mad.
You don't have to yell.
No, I'm not yelling. No, I'm not
screaming.
I am not screaming.
You're screaming.
Okay.
You're being screaming. I sorry I'm a huge disappointment to you. And I just, that makes me nervous. And I will open up all these gifts, but honestly, the only gift I need is maybe like a little love in this house, you know?
We didn't have love, we can't give it to you.
I know. I know, it's just obvious, you know? Like when I started reading books, it became obvious that we traffic in metaphors here, you know? Uh-huh. Like, we do the boxes, we do the cake.
Yeah.
Why can't we not do that? Maybe donate it to charity and just say like, hey, you're having a hard time. I love you. You're gonna be a good banker one day or a good lawyer or something, you know? You could have been Jesus.
I could have been.
Smartest one. You're a total disappointment for the family.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that you take after me.
Okay. It makes me feel like we're in a gang.
Well, we are kind of in a gang. It's called the Gallagher family. Okay?
Right.
We stick together.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah.
You got a little bounce in your step.
I do. I have a little bounce in my step.
Okay.
Can I help you? Will you let me help you?
Yes, you can help me if you want. Here you go.
Okay.
Just take them off the top rack and one on the bottom.
Well, I was going to tell you how to do it.
Oh, you're going to teach me.
I was going to teach you.
Okay, because I'm an idiot. Please teach me.
Well, not if you're going to act like that.
I'm going to act like
that. You're acting like little babies when you're acting.
Like
yes, you are.
No, I'm not.
Yes.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
You can teach me.
You know what? When you put that, the finger to your head, it reminds me of when you tried to commit suicide last
year. Okay.
Yeah. Your mother said, don't bring it up. Don't bring it up.
Of course that's what she said. And she brought a gift and a cake.
We're just trying to connect with you, okay?
No, you're...
If you want to connect with me, just... Now you're all Sloopy Dog posture. You know what I mean? Like, just tell me what you think of me. I'm tired of asking what I need from this family. I want to wake up one day with their sunshine and someone says, you're worth it. You know what I mean? I talk too much about what I need. It makes me feel... This is really insulting and, like, totally inappropriate.
Okay, it's your birthday. You can say it.
It makes me feel like when Uncle Donnie would be like, when I would cry, and he'd say, stop acting like a faggot.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
It makes me feel like that, even though I know that word is totally inappropriate. But I feel like a faggot.
Okay. Well, I'll just tell you right now, you are not a faggot.
I know.
Okay?
I'm not a faggot.
All right?
There'd be nothing wrong if I were.
No.
Right?
Is there something you... is there something you need to tell us?
I ran into this guy today.
Really?
Yeah. And in high school we used to experiment a little bit.
Like science and stuff?
Like science?
You all did that. You all did that, sure. Science.
No. Like the science experiment where, like, I put his dick in my mouth.
Okay. Okay. All right. Okay. You know what? These are done. Come over and get them.
I never liked the taste of cum.
Okay. Okay. Let's go. You know what? I haven't done this in a long time. Why don't I wheel you over?
It's nice to get the truth out, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's good. This is the best birthday yet so far.
All right. There you go.
Thank you.
All right. Here. Just put them right on here. Okay.
I feel lighter. You feel weirder?
Well, fine.
You can tell me. I think sexuality in this country is a big nebulous gray box that we, you know, need to maybe deal with a little bit better. Things are a little too black and white sometimes. Do they keep it in your finger?
You know what? I got sauce. I got barbecue sauce on my finger, and I'm just trying to get it off.
Oh yeah.
All right. Don't run over the gifts with the wheelchair.
I won't.
Mother would be really hurt if you did. She really went out of her way this year. I think I'm bisexual. You know what?
That's my birthday gift to myself.
That's great. That's really great. You know, sometimes, like, there's things that, like, let me tell you, when I was 18 years old, okay, There was this girl. Okay?
Yeah.
All right? Gorgeous. Her name was Naomi. All right? And I got her pregnant. And you know, back then, that was... No, you're right. It was not a good thing.
No.
Okay, not. So, I had a football scholarship. Okay?
Yeah.
And I didn't want to lose a football scholarship. So I talked Naomi into getting an abortion. Okay? But the thing is, I never told my parents. I never told anybody. I told you now because I'm trying to make a point.
What's the point?
That there's some things that we don't need to know about.
I think I get it.
Okay.
Maybe we can write her a postcard today.
Naomi?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we could do that.
Or call her? Maybe today could be like a big day of healing at the Gallagher house. And we can put a sign out in front that says, birthday usurped this year in lieu of healing.
I don't know why you're so focused on healing, okay?
Why not? Are you frozen? You just blinked. Why not be focused on healing? Don't you want to heal?
You know
what? Don't you want to? Do you think maybe when you go to heaven, you'll meet the child, maybe, and you can explain, not like maybe he or she's mad, but you can have a conversation and be like, I was at this place where I wanted to play football, and you weren't really convenient, and I'm like, that's the best I could do at that point, and I would maybe meet Paul, who smelled like a tent.
Okay.
And I can tell him that I miss him. And the four of us can sit down in heaven and have a great dinner.
I you're really frustrating me, okay?
Sorry.
I'm trying to just make this a special day for you. Well, a hug? Okay. Are we done?
Now we're done.
Okay.
This is better than eating cake and opening up stupid gifts. Right?
Yeah. You know, I said to myself, I'm going to say something to you that my dad never said anything. Never said to me.
Okay.
I'm thinking about it. My dad was not an emotional guy.
Yeah.
You know, he pretended everything was fine. And I said to myself, I'm not going to have the same thing happen to my son.
Right.
So I wanted to say, I love you.
Yeah. See, that's nice. We should put that sign up in front of the house. It'd be cool. Okay. All the neighbors can see it?
Let's do it.
Yeah?
Yeah. All right, edit.
This is one fucked up job.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Like when you slide. I mean, it'll pass. People say I'm too loud sometimes in conversation.
You're not too loud.
Too loud.
It's bullshit. You know what? You're opinionated and you know what you know what you want,
yes,
and you
I
say
do.
It, and people can't take that.
That's right. I speak it.
You speak it.
I think it's a fucked up job. I think it's going to pass. That's all I'll say about it.
All right.
Are you resting all your weight on me right
I'm
now?
I'm resting all my weight.
Okay, good. Well, that's that.
That's that.
I don't think I'm too loud, do you?
I don't think you're too loud at all. I don't think you're loud enough, to be honest with you.
Thank you. Sometimes we finish these jobs, you know, I want to scream on the top of the roof. Nikki and I fucking built this.
Nick,
city.
You know what? We're going to do it.
Yeah?
Yeah, we're going to do it.
All right. Nikki and I have fucking built this city.
The two Nicks
built this city. Not a rock and roll motherfucker.
But on fucking hard work.
And hard work and labor and balls.
Yeah.
And sweat. And tears.
And love. Because you know what?
What's that?
I love what we fucking do.
I do too.
You know, we take pride. Yeah. Nobody could make a corner say, you know what? That's passable.
Exactly.
You know?
And then where's those guys, you know, like, they did it with the World Trade Center taking pictures of the black and whites, you know?
Yeah.
But like the guys on the beam eating lunch.
Uh-huh.
And no one ever took a fucking picture of us eating lunch.
No. No.
You know what I mean?
Because you know what? We're humble.
There's a difference between being humble and being invisible, Nick. And we're fucking invisible to that city.
Someday, it's going to be different.
You think so?
No, I know it's going to be different.
Like today?
Today. You're right.
Because we screamed it out loud?
We screamed it out loud. That's the first step of not being invisible no more.
I hope today is the day it changes, city.
I do too, city.
Between the two Knicks.
The two Knicks are no longer invisible. See us right here.
We are not cast for the friendly ghost, city. We are people and we have needs. We are not morons with big tools.
That's what exactly they think.
They look at us and they're like, oh, these guys
are morons with big tools.
They don't know what a book is. You know what I mean? It's insulting.
It is.
It makes me cry about it. You know what I mean?
Me too.
I cry. I have fucking emotions.
I know. I've seen you cry.
Yeah. You have seen me cry. No one took a fucking picture.
No one took no fucking picture.
I cry, city. You know what? I have emotions. If you want to document it. I've seen Nikki cry.
I've cried. You know,
Holy shit.
I feel like crying right now.
Because
this city is not treating us the way we should be
treated.
You're
making Nikki cry, you piece of
shit. Thank you. You want to smoke?
Yeah, I'm coughing.
It's menthol.
Oh, cool.
It should be good for your cold.
Thank you. Get some fucking recognition once in a while, you know what I mean?
Because we can't get it. We don't get it at work.
We don't get it at home.
We don't get it at home.
We didn't get it at school because you didn't teach us nothing, because you don't pay the teachers enough and your grandfather them into the system.
Fucking shit!
That's just my opinion of the education system.
No! That's what I like about you, Nick.
Yeah.
You don't hold back.
No, I don't.
I wish I was more like you, Nick.
Oh, you're like me.
No, I'm not.
You both named Nick.
That's where the similarities stop.
The two Nicks.
No. You're always getting the women. I'm not that good at the women.
You just get divorced a lot, that's all. I've never been married. You've been married. I've never been married.
You know what? You're good at sports. Even though you're in a wheelchair, you're still better at sports.
I'm good at sports. You're a good referee. How am I going to play sports with a referee? You don't have that. You have chaos. That is the Taliban, my friend.
All right, one more, Nick. One more. You cannot dispute this.
What's it?
You are better with money.
I'm better with money. You know how to work a spreadsheet. How are you supposed to balance your checkbook if you don't know how to do Excel? Right?
You know, Nick, I got to tell you something. When we got to the edge there, I was going to jump off.
Fuck you.
No, I was serious. I was going to fuck off. I'm like, this is it. This life is worthless. And then you just convinced me.
Yeah?
To stay around.
If you fucking jumped off this building, if you jumped off the fucking 75th floor of this building, I would go down to where you fucking fell on the sidewalk and I'd fucking beat the shit out of you.
So let's go to the audience. Yes.
What do you ask of yourself to reach your full potential on stage?
Oh, God. You know, I say a few different, prayer mantra things before coming to work. I usually say, I can't do this, you do it, to the universe. I say, dear God, please release me from the need for love, approval, and appreciation tonight. It doesn't have to be God, it can be anything, you know. and I try to cultivate a healthy sense of not caring in terms of it being about me, you know, and like me as an individual. It should be about like what I can make with you together, you know? And whether it's my full potential or not, I mean, I'm probably the worst judge to say, you know?
I was thinking in terms of craft. Is there anything that you're like procedures or rules or things that you're always trying to hit to really bring the stuff out when you're performing?
You know, the only rule I kind of give myself is I try to force myself to let the first scene, to let it be a character as opposed to too close to persona. Especially when playing with people you don't know well, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like it can get into me being me, you know, and just kind of speaking my own point of view about things, which isn't as fun as playing someone else, you know. So that's something I kind of give myself a kick in my own ass to get into creative space right off the top and to see what we've created. And you know, the first thing I did was judge myself, pork chop, and I go to a grill and I'm like, okay, literal. But, you know, but now I have a choice to either dig into that and see this deck. Uh-huh. I mean, I thought we were on a deck. And this house. Or continue to stall out and judge myself. And it's just a split-second decision to not do that and to do the porno.
There was one part in the first scene that I thought to myself, I'm going back to the barbecue, and which was pork chops. And I'm thinking, I'm telling him, like, there was a part where, like, I want to teach you. Do you remember that beat?
Yep.
And for me, and I see this in class all the time, and it, to me, that is me controlling. Like, I'm not trust. When I go to that place of I want to teach you something,
yeah.
or I want you've got to do it my way, to me, that's the part of I'm afraid I want to control.
yeah.
You know?
I think it was called out, though, because I thought, oh, you're going to teach me now.
Yes.
You know?
And then I felt shame, and I'm like, oh, my God, you know, I'm being called out. So,
but it's also protected by the fact that your character was a genius. Like, in my mind, I feel like you, Jimmy, were trying to teach me, like,
right.
control the scene. It felt like this guy, who's a genius, is, of course, going to... deal with my emotions with an intermediary object.
Right. Well, you experience the character as being a genius?
Your character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I experience him as like a version of my father being like, you know, he doesn't want to deal with anything, you know, especially if the kid's,
yeah.
you know, bisexual, he's not going to go there.
Well, I'd said, you know, you're a genius, you could have been anything.
Right.
Even though you didn't accomplish it, I still looked up to you as okay. someone who had the potential.
Right.
But maybe just didn't.
It's interesting how the different perceptions of the characters.
Sure.
Another question. Yes.
Do you find yourself drawn to any particular type of character or characters?
Like recurrent things that come up in my work.
Different types of personalities that you maybe find yourself attracted to playing.
Well, I'm very attracted to playing anything, anybody who doesn't. Who has a very different set of morality or point of view than I do. You know, I have the most fun playing people wildly unlike myself, you know, in situations I've never been, you know, as opposed to... I just for a long time, I was so comfortable playing me, you know, and then it just gets really old after a while. So a slight... adjustment, like leaning forward in the wheelchair, creates a goofy little voice and this beaten down character, and that was enough to trust, at least initially,
mm-hmm.
for the first scene. But
and your character on Private Practice is kind of a jerk.
Yeah, it's funny. I after playing him the first few episodes that aired, I mean, I knew he was definitely manifesting some insecurity through. You know, braggadocio and arrogance, but I mean, the amount of reaction about how arrogant he was surprising, you know. Yes, he's certainly cutting and sharp and whatnot, you know, but I think that's just symptomatic of an actor forgiving his character too much and not seeing him objectively, you know. I had an 8-year-old girl from Germany write me a fan mail message that said, I'm terrible at eye contact, by the way. that's perfect, idiomatic, like perfect grammar. While I do enjoy your portrayal of Dr. Fife, I do maintain he is quite an asshole. In like purple brand. But you know, TV is weird too because you know you can't really get away with Daniel Day-Lewis-ing it too much and being something crazy because right. The medium is just too small. It's in your living room and it seems too big, too loud, you know? And so that was a thing of like, well, I don't want to fucking play myself, you know? So just small adjustments like sitting up straighter and speaking from a different place and makes the day go by a little more fun.
Yeah, TV is weird because I've done a couple things. I suck at commercials. And I'm a bad actor, but I get stuff anyways. And it's usually never comedic. It's always like... And the two things that I realize is one is you got to talk really soft. I mean, you get, like if we were doing a scene, it'd be like this.
Right.
Honestly, you're that quiet. Yeah. And they don't really care about the acting. It's just like, say the lines and move on.
Yeah, it's camera angles.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an assumption of competence. Like mm-hmm. once you're on set, there's an assumption that you actually know what you're doing.
Right. But that's when the fear starts to kick in for me.
Yeah, but you and Messing, you know, this is a recurrent thing, I think, among us singularly identified improviser artists.
Right.
Of like, I'm a shitty actor. And the truth is, of course, you're not, obviously. Look at what you just did. I mean,
right.
why is that not called acting? You know what I mean? And
right.
Why is it called improvising?
Right. Well, I'll go home and say, oh, that, for me, like, I'll be like, oh, that I could have done better. And, you know, you know, I'm sitting in a half a pool of shame. Usually it's all shame. Now I'm just like half a pool. But,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, sure.
We got time for one more question. Yes.
Yeah. What's like your what's your difference in creating a character on stage versus creating a character on film?
On stage, I trust the process of rehearsal and the fact that the plays never really open until closing night, you know, to guide me through. TV and film, it's more of an accelerated process, which gets me a little worried as someone who likes to have rehearsal. It involves a lot more, from my process, a lot more research early on, hitting the ground running. Because essentially you're putting the performance together all on your own, you know, and also you're shooting out of sequence, so you need to be damn certain I know everything that's happened before this scene. The first scene we shoot in the episode might very well be the fourth scene in the storyline, you know, so that needs to be crystal clear, which is especially problematic when it's being rewritten up until the last moment, you know, but both processes have had the same invaluable lesson of learning how to work personally first, right off the bat, you know, finding something, you know, some monologue about genetics or something in the design of private practice. You know, what is it that I, Mike, actually can hook into and love about this and really believe? So it doesn't matter that I'm talking about some genetic procedure. If the macro idea is actually about freedom and something that I believe that everyone should be free to have their own choice, then I'm happy to talk at length about that, whether it's a monologue about genetics or, you know, some other scene on stage, you know, so there's just a lot more booby traps, I think, in TV and film in terms of, like, directing yourself, and I think sometimes the tendency is to bring things closer to you so that you don't have to go out on the ledge a little more. I think it's, in fact, the opposite. You have to make a very strong, scary, personal choice immediately, and then that can be an organizational principle for these scenes that are going to get rewritten and reshuffled, and that's okay then, as long as you know the main idea of why you're there.
And the other thing I realized is you're not going to get, oh, great job, Mike. I mean, it's like, you know, like we're so used to that in improv and theater. It's like, oh, great, or, you know, move on, you know?
There's a John Cusack story about Bullets Over Broadway where, you know, Woody Allen had not given him a note
mm-hmm.
for 2 weeks. He was just like, cut, you know. And finally, Woody Allen came up to him to give him a note, and Cusack was really excited. He's like, oh, God, I'm going to get directed by Woody Allen now. And he was like, hey, John, yeah, could you make this go a little faster? I have tickets to the Mets tonight. And like that was the only direction he got from Woody Allen, you know. I mean, it's true, you don't. You're in your own little vacuum. You don't know.
And what someone gave me a great piece of advice. If they don't say anything, you're doing good. Just keep going.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Now, you get to the private practice. Why not move to L.A.? Like, most Chicago actors would just go, I'm going to move to L.A., I'm going to, you know.
Well, you know, my heart and soul really is in Chicago. I'm in Chicago, and I still live in the neighborhood in which I grew up. My theater's in the neighborhood in which I grew up. It would be highly disingenuous, I think, to kind of go, got a good break, see you later. And also, the break is, it's a recurring guest role. It's a wonderful opportunity to fly in for work and also not have to leave everyone and everything I love behind. You know, I absolutely love doing, I've been so blessed and fortunate to do TV and film work. And while I love being out there and sitting outside, and, you know, in October on a sidewalk having a glass of wine, you know, it's not a city I would like to live in. You know, it's a city I love working in. But I'm happy letting the opportunities come. We have a lot to accomplish at the Gift still.
So 10 years from now, where do you hope the Gift is?
It's like the Mitch Hedberg joke, celebrating the 10-year anniversary of you asking me this question.
Because you're going to be celebrating 10 years.
We celebrate 10 years November 18th.
Okay,
yeah.
So 10 years from now.
Yeah, 10 years from now, I think you're going to see a major, major hub, a cultural hub of the Northwest Side in the city of Chicago, at the corner of Milwaukee and Lawrence. I think you're going to see several performance spaces. I think you're going to see a shift in the mindset of what art is, from something that rich people do downtown to something as commonplace as doing your grocery shopping. I think you're going to see a switch from selling the play to selling the theater company, and the audience and actor relationship being paramount. Ironic, given that I'm the guy who like has terrible eye contact, and this is the first time I'm actually looking at you. You know, I think you're going to see a great education program. You're going to see our ensemble working in TV and film. And several pubs, hopefully, connected to the different theaters. I mean, a real paradigm shift in how art is presented. And, you know, us a little older and wiser.
So where can we see you perform?
I'm kind of unemployed right now. So every Wednesday night I improvise with a group called Natural Gas at the Gift Theater. It's Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, $5. That's what I'm doing right now. I'm, you know, certainly auditioning for things, and we'll see what happens with what's going on out west. But right now, Wednesday nights.
Well, hopefully we'll get to audition for a TV commercial together.
You and me?
Yeah.
And we'll have the knowledge that we did this show and
Yeah.
And then we'll have false confidence and we'll ruin it.
Yes. You can guarantee I will ruin it. Michael Patrick Thornton, thank you so much for being our guest.
Thank you.
It was really great to hear Michael talk about his spiritual side and fear of performing in front of an audience, because I really like it when performers are honest and candid about their spiritual side and also about their fear, because I know for me, I'm always afraid before, during, and after a performance. If you want to catch Michael Patrick Thornton, you can catch him at his own theater, the Gift Theater, on Wednesday nights, where they do improv. So I would definitely check that out. You can probably also look him up on Hulu. What's the other thing? I can't think. They call it the YouTube. Is that what they call it? The YouTube. And probably see old episodes of ABC's The Practice. So that's it. Thanks for listening. Before we go, I'd like to thank my producer, Ben Caprero, and the good people here at Stage 773 in Chicago. If you want more of Improv Nerd, I will help you out here. All you have to do is go to Improv Nerd on Facebook and like us. And JimmyCarain.com. There's all sorts of really cool stuff there. And until our next podcast, I want to thank you for listening. I'm Jimmy Carain.
Say Seinfeld was on an island, yeah, and he was blowing Boris Karloff. What would that be like?
It might go something like this. Oh, Mr. Karloff, I loved you in Frankenstein. and I love giving you a blowjob. Why, Mr. Seinfeld, I'd love having you